The Worthing Podcast with Inside Publications.
Hello and welcome to The Worthing Podcast with Inside Publications. I'm Patrick.
I'm Liana.
And I'm Esme.
The October issue of Inside is dropping through people's letterboxes as we speak. Liana, how many people are involved in the distribution?
Well, we have a distribution manager who works really hard at making sure it's done thoroughly. And we have about 55 13 to 15-year-olds working for us, all with their own separate maps, and they're all tracked. And yeah.
Right. So remind us of the different area editions that you have now.
OK, let's try and get this list right. So there's Broadwater, Cissbury, Durrington, Goring, Tarring, West Worthing and Worthing.
My goodness, it's become quite a big operation over the years,
hasn't
it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we can feel that.
That's really good. So let's take a look then at the October issue, which is before us at the moment. What's inside this month?
Well, this month's theme is Life Underwater, which is the United Nations Sustainable Development Goal number 14. We've been quite excited about this theme, haven't we?
Yeah, we have. As you can see from our front cover, we have a testimonial to Steve Allnut from Sussex Seabed Restoration, who's taken the initiative to grow his own kelp at his home in Lancing and restoring seabeds across our south coast. Gauging from my impression of his social media and other articles online, it looks really difficult to grow kelp and it's taken a lot of practice. He and others at Sussex Seabed Restoration are making a huge impact on the community. No wonder Steve is written about in at least three articles this month.
Well, it's really important, isn't it, though, to bring awareness to the pollution and destruction of our seabeds, especially when we have the privilege of living by the sea. And I think without that awareness, we don't see what's under the sea.
No, definitely.
You just see the top of the sea.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah, tip of the iceberg. Caroline O'Sella, who is a local anthropologist and also someone we're fortunate enough to have as a monthly contributor, wrote a really interesting, beautiful article this month. I always love reading their articles, and their style of writing is so engaging. Their writing is itself a form of creative activism, I think, because you want to read to the end, you listen to the message, and it makes you think.
Caroline wrote about their experience of the exhibition Interweaving Spaces at Worthing Museum, bringing urgent awareness to the destruction of life underwater through art, movement and textures. The article not only represents pressing messages, but it raises the importance of art and creativity as a form of activism.
I think this form of communication is just so powerful. It's nuggets of gold like these that continue to prove to me, time and time again, that art is probably the strongest form of communication. It has serious power to change people's minds, which is such a hard thing to do.
I couldn't agree more. Interweaving Spaces by artist Gil Mowlam-Doran, I hope I pronounced that correctly, is exhibiting at Worthing Museum until the 5th of November.
Ooh, remember.
Speaking of which, we have some exciting content on its way for November, so stay tuned.
Looking at the front cover, I notice you've also featured the boxing club for people with Parkinson's disease.
We do indeed. Last month we were invited to the Bar Gym, where 19-year-old Harry Radenhurst holds regular boxing classes, which he volunteers for people with Parkinson's disease. It's an outstanding initiative. Patrick managed to speak with Harry, Worthing's Mayor John Rosa and Donna Felstead, chair of the local Parkinson's Association branch.
So what has boxing got to do with Parkinson's?
It's not per se the boxing, it's the movement, it's the exercise, it sounds weird, the monotony in a lot of ways. So what we're finding, and it's not just boxing, it's across the piece, people who are living with Parkinson's, if they have sort of like a rhythmic motion, then actually we see that they suddenly stop some of their, what would I call, their symptoms, so the shaking, the freezing, etc. And as you can see here, I'm watching them, and they're all amazing. I'm watching them, and you can see that because they're concentrating so much on what they're doing, their symptoms will never disappear, but it really supports them.
That's Donna Felstead from Parkinson's UK in Worthing. Harry Radenhurst set up the gym called Coast to Coast Boxing just a year ago, and already it's proving popular among a wide range of users. But Harry wanted to do more than run a boxing gym. He wants to help his community.
We were aware that in Worthing there was a need for something like this. These classes aren't common, but there are a large amount of people that are, you know, that have Parkinson's disease. Yeah. There's also a big movement of it in America. It's quite big in America. So that was sort of our inspiration to sort of think, we want to do something within the community, what could it be? And that gave us the inspiration from there. And since doing it, you know, I started off with a little bit of knowledge, and I'm still got a long way to go in terms of developing the knowledge, but it's been amazing to see, because a lot of the people that are here today have been with us from the beginning. We've been open as a club for a year, and a lot of them have been coming back ever since. So, right. You know, I see the social benefits. You know, they're talking, they understand each other, they've got the level of empathy because they're all going through similar things. But they've also got an outlet to express their negative emotions, because it's not a nice thing to be living with, and there is frustrations and those sorts of things where they need to expend that, and boxing is a very, very good way of doing that.
Harry Radenhurst. One notable Worthing resident who came along to the event with us was the Mayor, Councillor John Rosa. He was also brave enough to actually take part and do some sparring with Harry. He sees the benefits not just for those with Parkinson's, but in Harry and his team wanting to do something for the local community.
Yeah, I think that's essentially what we should be all trying to do, really. That's, you know, if people can do something like this and it's available, just an hour a week, you know, is going to make a difference to someone's life. I think it's an excellent thing. Anything that can help people with Parkinson's actually overcome difficulties they have, to help them gain coordination and things like that, is just an excellent.
I saw you doing a little bit of the boxing and taking part in it yourself. Can you see how these other people here have benefited or are benefiting from what's going on here?
I mean, I wouldn't know about the long term, but I can see the benefits. I mean, I do gym training myself once a week, and I find that really helps get the mind-body coordination working, you know, because you can sometimes start a session a bit sort of up in your head. But when you do exercise, it takes you down into your body and helps you develop the awareness of your body that you need.
Worthing's Mayor John Rosa. Finally, Harry explained that the benefits of boxing for people with Parkinson's have been well researched.
There are a couple of studies out that do really talk about the benefits of boxing training helping with Parkinson's. I know that from a cognitive perspective, where they are having to think whilst exercising. So stuff like sequencing, they can struggle with. And when we're doing the pad work, we try and make it challenging for them. Not so that they fail and they feel bad, but it's like, right, this is challenging because I'm throwing one combination 1 minute, the next second I'm throwing another combination, and that really challenges them to use their thought processes as well as they're moving their body, they're extending, they're rotating, and that, you know, you've got the physiological benefits and the psychological benefits, you know. Yeah. So that's really good. And it's been really nice to see, because you can read studies on the benefits, but to see it firsthand has been really nice.
That's Harry Radenhurst with that final thought on the power of boxing training. So, Liana, can you give me one more article that stands out for you this month?
We have quite a funny story about Matt's article.
Oh, yeah.
Matt Marchant, that is. he sent me his article without a heading this month, which isn't like him.
Yeah, so I asked AI to help me come up with a name for it. And because of the impressive number of times Matt managed to bring up a bread pun, it came up with the name, Are We Turning Our Planet Into Toast?
AI is clever, isn't it?
Yeah. And this inspired our designer, Andy, to ask AI to create an image of a planet turned to toast. So if you look for the article, you'll be able to see what our planet would seriously look like if it was turned to toast.
That's brilliant. Well done.
Matt had quite a few readers respond to his article in August that dissed bread makers, which inspired this bread theme. So we've put a couple of these responses in our new feedback section.
Yes, we've created a new feedback section, so get in touch if you have anything you'd like to say. A reader contacted us regarding an article from last month, and it led to a very interesting discovery, but we'll keep this as a surprise for now.
Oh, shall we keep it as a surprise, or should we just tell them?
I think you should tell them.
I should tell them. Okay, then. Well, we received a phone call a few weeks back from a reader named Chris Pennells about a picture displayed in last month's edition in Chris Hare's article on the history of Findon Sheep Fair. Mm. It was about a photograph picturing a lady and two men from the 1800s.
We were trying to figure out what the young lady was holding, weren't we?
Yeah, we were. And as it turned out, her name was Juliet Summers, and she was drawing George Humphrey, one of the shepherds in the photo. And George Humphrey is Chris's great-grandfather. And amazingly, Chris actually had the original drawing at his home.
Yeah, we later visited him and took a photo of this drawing, which you can find in our feedback section.
That's an amazing connection, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Tremendous. Yeah. Okay, good.
Keeps us going, that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely, it does. Yeah.
It does. So we've all had a taste of country life this month when we went to Findon Sheep Fair ourselves. It's an annual event attracting thousands of people from Findon, Worthing and beyond. On the hottest day of the year so far, Patrick went around and talked to a few people to catch some of the atmosphere. First was Richard Bell, one of the organisers, who told him about the main attraction.
Well, we actually originally had about 300 sheep. The numbers got down a bit because of the heat. A few farms had decided not to bring their sheep, but the other farms who are able to provide shading for the sheep, etc., and are happy that their breeds will cope with the temperature, have brought them along. So you're probably looking at just under 300 sheep here today, I would say. They come from across the south of England, so we've got Hampshire, Kent, Sussex, Surrey, and other sort of home counties.
How has the Findon Sheep Fair changed over the years?
Well, it's changed quite dramatically in 2000-2001 because of the foot and mouth outbreak. Prior to that, Findon Sheep Fair was primarily an auction, and people used to bring their sheep along and sell them, farmers to other farms. And in its heyday, we would have up to 3,000 sheep here, and that's some time ago. But then, thanks to foot and mouth disease, restrictions came in, and you could only auction on hard ground, and we didn't really want to tarmac over our precious Nepcote greens, so we then sort of transferred to showing sheep, a bit like a modern sheep equivalent to crufts, rather than actually auctioning them. And we started with literally half a dozen sheep one year, and we built up to where we are now.
I mean, looking around now, it's clear that obviously the sheep are here, but this is about a lot more than sheep, isn't it? It's a whole community event.
It is very much a community event. We have a fun fair, an old traditional fun fair, Harris's. They've been here. They used to come here back in the days when we did auction sheep, probably up to 100 years ago. They've got connections with us. So it is very much that. And it's grown from there. There are sales, there are attractions, and we have all sorts of things going on at the fair. And obviously an opportunity for people to sell local produce and that sort of thing, and for local people to get together. So, yes, it's very much a community event as well.
And obviously loads and loads of people here. How much does it engage the local Findon community?
Oh, very much so. We have somewhere in the region of 100 volunteers, mostly from the village, who get involved. The village is very supportive.
That's Richard Bell. You know you're in the country when you meet the Morris dancers. Sompting Village Morris were doing their stuff, and leader Marcus Dole told me that there's a lot of dances to choose from.
There's the Black Book of Morris, which has got hundreds of dances, but we have a repertoire of, for our gentleman's side, probably 30, 40 dances. We don't do them every year, so we would normally concentrate on, say, 20 a year, and we'll practice those and produce them.
Now, I've got to be a little bit careful on this one, but when you look at Morris dancers, they tend to be generally of a certain age. Do you have difficulty attracting younger people?
A little bit, yes. We have got some younger dancers. They don't happen to be with us at the moment, but we have got some younger dancers, and we're recruiting at the moment, so we're looking for new dancers to come along, and we've got a lot of interest this year, so we're hoping to take an intake of 4 or 5 new people this year in the gentlemen's side. Same for the ladies.
Morris dancing creates this amazing atmosphere which kind of harks back to a past age, doesn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely does. It's got a lovely feel to it. It's got a sort of a roots in the history of the countryside. It's really nice. And it's very friendly. You know, the whole group are very, very friendly, and it's a very good family feel.
They're looking for younger dancers, Esme. Would you like to have a go?
Maybe when I'm a bit older.
That's not the point.
Looking
for younger dancers.
I don't know. I'm not very good at dancing. To be only 80s I could dance to.
You could learn.
as we found out from a charity event. But one very popular attraction was the Birds of Prey, I must say. I think you spoke to Kevin Lochner, who told you about his range of birds.
Here we've got 5, but altogether I've got 13.
And what different birds?
We've got 4 harris hawks, we've got a barn owl, a tawny owl, a young peregrine falcon, 2 lanner falcons, African spotted owl, a kestrel, common buzzard, and a geosaker, which is a hybrid falcon.
Is it difficult kind of keeping track of these birds? They could fly away.
Yeah. So we have them from young. All the birds, when I fly them, they have trackers on, GPS trackers, so I can link to my phone. So I can literally see where the bird is any one time how high it's flown, how fast, where it is. That's my young peregrine calling. So yes, you can hear him calling the background.
They're pretty rare, some of these, aren't they?
Most of them in decline, especially our native species like barn owls, tawny owls, kestrels, maybe sparrowhawks. 75% of young birds of prey will die in their first year. That's a high percentage. They die of starvation. Us humans destroy their habitat. White-tailed seagulls have been reintroduced because they were extinct in this country, so they've been recently reintroduced in this country.
What do you like about birds of prey?
As you can see for yourself, for your listeners, I mean, they're absolutely stunning. It used to be a hobby for me 13 years ago with the Harris hawk I'm just pointing at, Amy. I've had her 13 years. I used to hunt her, then we started doing experience days on practice on friends and family. Now we do private experience days, we do pest control with the hawks, and shows like we are do here at Finn and Sheep Fair.
And you must find it enormous fun, do you?
Yeah, it's good fun, 7 days a week. It's hard work.
Yeah.
With 13 birds, but got to make sure they're all obviously healthy and safe, and especially in these weather conditions, hence why we've only got five here and we left the others at home to cool down or cool in their aviaries at home.
And finally, I spoke to someone who loves her sheep. Vivian Miles was one of the judges.
I'm looking for breed type, quality and correctness. And obviously you compete one sheep against another, and that's how you sort them out into order of placings. It's not an easy job. You've got to know your breeds, you've got to know the breed type, and you've also got to be very, very fair on the exhibitors. That's the most important bit. And also making them feel comfortable, explaining why you've put one sheep above them, very gently. Obviously, you can't be rude, because that's not the way we do it. And most people are encouraged by that, and they'll come back the following year.
I mean, this is a kind of a country pursuit that goes back years, doesn't it?
It goes back a long, long time. My grandfather was a farmer and he was showing animals at Thanet in 1908. So that just shows you that obviously farming's in my blood. And my career actually was horses, so I think I've got an eye for an animal's balance and type.
What do you enjoy about judging sheep?
I love the people. I like youngsters to be encouraged to go forward, and I just love all types of sheep, really. It's just a passion, a craze. We don't know why we have it. Okay. It's something that's in the heart, in the soul, and it's always there.
Vivian Myers ending that look back on Findon Sheep Fair.
Well, that's it from the Worthing podcast with Inside for this month. Join us again next time, but in the meantime, watch out for your copy of the magazine. Until next time, from Liana.
Goodbye.
From Esme.
Goodbye.
And from me, Patrick Woodward. Goodbye.
The Worthing Podcast with Inside Publications.